Well, good evening. Dr. Gerald Pfeiffer here with another session of Medical Frontiers on KDK, sponsored by Highmark. We're going to be talking this evening about the Center for Traumatic Stress in Children and Adolescents at Allegheny Health Network. We've talked about that before, but this is a special occasion because it's been 33 years since this Center of Excellence has been in place, and somebody who was around at that time and around before that is Dr. Tony Manarino. And Dr. Manarino is an excellent clinical psychologist. He's head of the Department of Psychiatry and Psychology for Allegheny Health Network. He was telling me that we now have over 60 healthcare professionals in the Department of Psychology and Psychiatry. Welcome back to Medical Frontiers, Dr. Manarino. It's always great to see you.
Great to see you, Dr. Pfeiffer.
Yeah, 33 years. Can you believe it's that long?
It's hard to believe. Actually, it's 30 years. We started February 1st, 1994, so just celebrated our 30th anniversary.
Okay, 30th anniversary.
Yes.
Yeah, but that's a long time. It probably took a few years to just get it up and running.
It did, but as it turned out, 1994 was a momentous year. There was a lot of gang violence on the north side of Pittsburgh,
uh-huh.
so we were involved in dealing with some of those activities. Then you might remember that on September 8th, 1994, was the U.S. Airways plane crash.
Oh.
And we were involved in the aftermath.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And that, of course, was a horrible traumatic event. Most of the passengers were from Pittsburgh, so worked with many families who were survivors, surviving family members.
Well, that's fantastic. And so 30 years for that center, it really goes fast. But three decades is a long time. There's lots and lots of, 6,000 people have been treated through that center in the last 30 years?
Yeah, over 6,000.
That's really great. Just say a few words about, you know, we all have traumatic stresses in our lifetime. And so those can be very, very significant, no matter what age we're in.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes we sort of don't think about the children so much, the adolescents, the pediatric age group, you know, young children, adolescents, and so on. When they lose a parent, when they lose a sibling, when they lose a good playmate, classmate, or whatever, that type of thing. And then the pandemic, where the kids couldn't go to school for a year and a half, you know, just a tremendous, tremendous emotional, psychological effect on them that affected their education, their growth in societal relationships, that type of thing. And you probably have been swamped because of something as big of a stressor as a pandemic.
Absolutely. It's a little-known fact that two-thirds of American children by the age of 16 have experienced at least one traumatic event. Two-thirds. That's way more than asthma, way more than ADHD. And you're so right. During the pandemic, we had kids who were isolated, but we also had children who lost a parent, a grandparent, another extended family member because of COVID. Because, of course, we all remember that in those first couple of years, the number of deaths in the U.S. was extremely high. Also, in those first couple of years, child abuse, domestic violence in Pennsylvania greatly increased. So we had children exposed to more traumas in those years of the pandemic than ever before.
Have you had children in your practice who, say, lost both parents, say, in an auto accident, a fire, or something like that? And now they're orphaned, and even with strong familial connections and so on, what a tremendous, tremendous stress from an emotional standpoint on that child.
Yes, we have had children in our center lose both parents in a car accident or another type of accident. Sometimes we see children whose families have been beset by different kinds of violence, including suicide, homicides. And yes, it's a horrible loss for young children to experience that when they're young. But fortunately, and this is one of the great things about the work, is that despite the pain and the suffering, kids go forward, they're resilient, they bounce back, and we've developed evidence-based treatments that are effective in helping them.
Are children sometimes a little better than making that adjustment than their parents could possibly be?
I think one of the great things about children is that they tend to live in the here and now. And so when they go through these horrible experiences, they're able to be in the present more than adults might be. Plus, with adults who've experienced things so many years before, these things have been with them a long time, and it's harder to reverse some of the mental health issues that started 10, 15, 20 years ago. With kids, it's just more recent.
Right. One of the interesting things I read a number of years ago about military families that are, they're moving every year or two or three or four or five, and the effect on the children, not nearly as bad as the effect on the adults, especially if it was a man who was in the military and his wife and family follow him around and so on wherever he went, and the kids adjusted better than the wife did, with this, because they make new friends, and they're going to a different school, et cetera. But and I've talked to a lot of military brats, and they said it was kind of neat, to spend a year or two here, and then maybe 3 years there. And some of the experience was even overseas. Yeah,
it's amazing how resilient children are. They can really bounce back from things and recover, and that's what we see in our work at our Center for Traumatic Stress. That despite the horrific experiences that they've often been through, they're resilient. They have good coping skills. They get support from extended family members, and they move forward in their lives.
And sometimes they have a big positive influence on the older people in the family, because, hey, if Johnny can do it, I can smile. I can have a good time, even though I've been through a tough time and the type of thing. So
it's not uncommon in our practice for the children to recover first, and later the parents are moving forward, but the kids may go forward a little more quickly.
Yeah. Well, that's all good stuff. And that center that has been there for 30 years now, and hopefully will go for another 100 under your tutelage. You might retire before that, but I'm sure that there's going to be resources and so on. And you were telling me before the show that you even have a grant, federal grant, to help with this type of thing and program for adolescents and children. So this is Medical Frontiers, and we're talking about how can we better treat and have available access for treatment for children and adolescents who have had stress in their lives. Give us a call, 866-391-1020. If you are a child that went through a traumatic childhood and you've experienced more positivity as an adult and so on, we'd love to hear your story. Or if you have children who are going through a tough time, tell us your story. 866-391-1020. We'll be back. Okay, we are back on Medical Frontiers, and we're talking about adolescent and pediatric type stress-related instances that need professional care by a psychologist or a psychiatrist. And we're very fortunate this evening to have the head of the psychiatry and psychological department at AHN with us. And so if you have a question, you have a child who is struggling, maybe in school, over several issues or what have you, if a child is being bullied, if a child is not interested in school, not wanting to go for one reason or another, or if the child has lost a classmate, that type of thing. And I know in the adolescent group, it is actually terrifying for adolescents when they find a classmate has committed suicide or accidental death through an overdose or something like that. And you've probably dealt with that every week.
Sadly, the suicide rate among teenagers and even younger kids, 10 to 12, has significantly increased in the past decade after actually having dropped for a period of time. And a couple of children's hospitals around the countries have reported that when they look at the statistics in terms of kids in their emergency room, the highest percentage actually are there because of concerns about hurting themselves, which is such a far cry from 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's a dramatic increase in suicidal concerns among our kids.
Does the internet have a, is that a factor?
There's certainly accumulating data to show that long periods of time on the internet negatively affect children and adolescents.
So there should be a time limit.
Absolutely.
Put a clock on it. Okay. Okay. Let's go to Ron. Okay. Ron is our first caller. You're on the air, Ron. Do you have a question for Dr. Mannarino?
I'm at a place called Hamilton Field in Northern California. It used to be a military base. So my question is, when I followed the derailment in East Palestine and back in February, over a year ago, and I heard there was a settlement of some sort going on, I'm curious, for the long-range effects, the health effects, of those people that had their animals die in the first few days of that, who bioaccumulated things such as dioxins and so forth from the burn-off, what is there to establish that in 10 years, 20 or 30 years, effects of this accumulation of toxins in their fatty tissue, in their mother's milk, in the transgenerational effects? Where are the rewards and where is the health standard to demonstrate the causal effects?
Dr. Mannarino?
So I think the issue that you're raising about the long-term biological and physical effects on people is something that's going to be studied over time. What I can share with you from the psychological end, that there's no doubt that a significant number of people, children, adolescents, and adults, will have post-traumatic stress associated with that train derailment and all the problems that ensued. And you still hear about many people over a year later in East Palestine who have anxiety, sleep problems, can't concentrate at school or on the job, secondary to that incident.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Ron. We appreciate it. But any community tragedy like that, an explosion of a house, you mentioned the U.S. Air accident, you know, when it happened in Hopewell. And a lot of those passengers were from the Pittsburgh area. So whenever an accident happens like that, there's just an immediate need for emotional support, or when a classmate dies or something like that. And I think our school districts do a good job of bringing in the experts. And you've probably been part of that when a school district, somebody has an accidental death or something like that, and the students are struggling, and it takes somebody with a cool head and some experience to get them through that.
Well, just 10 years ago now, we had the stabbings out in Franklin Regional High School in Murrysville, where 21 people were stabbed, mostly students. Fortunately, because of the great medical work at Forbes Hospital and other places, everybody survived physically with some longer-term medical issues. But psychologically, there was a lot of trauma associated with that event. You can imagine what it was like for these kids to go back to school a week after, when they had to deal with the fact that 21 of their classmates had been stabbed in the science wing of the hallway. And yes, we were brought in, and we had impromptu counseling sessions at the high school where students or teachers could drop in because they were really having a rough time secondary to that incident. Mm-hmm. April 9th, 2014, so just 10 years ago.
Yeah, about that. So you never know. And some of those things, they happen so rapidly, and you have to move in quickly to try to temper that the effect of the trauma as soon as you possibly can. But oftentimes it's longstanding.
Yes. And one of the things we know from all of the school violence is that more kids in 2024 are fearful about going to school.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it could happen at Franklin Regional, if it could happen out in Colorado all those years ago, then it could happen in my high school too.
Yeah.
And what's being done to make sure it doesn't happen.
Absolutely. And I can remember being in school during the Second World War, you know, where air raids and so on, and fire drills and all that type of thing, and air raid drills and so on. And, you know, and I guess it was sort of like, I felt like that was normal. And it was for the time because of the times, you know. And so that's a new normal now where children are afraid to go to school because of, you know, stabbings or gunfire or whatever, you know, being bullied, whatever. And it's not easy going through adolescence without all of those stressors. Just going through adolescence itself is a stress, right?
Yes. I mean, it's an unfortunate new normal that our children have to deal with.
Yeah. And fortunately, we have centers like you head up and others that are ready to help. But what we have to do is be willing to ask for help.
Yes.
And be willing to, if the facility is there and we're not using it, then shame on the people that need it and don't want to go, that want to ask for help. So, you know, it's very, it's a very interesting thing. But I think that there's more help today because there is more need, but it's still, and you have a big department there. We have over 60 professionals helping with that type of thing. Okay, we need to take a break. This is Medical Frontiers. We're talking about stress in children and adolescents, what can be done about it, how can we treat it, how we can diagnose it, and do the best we can for our young folks, because they're going to be the leaders and the folks who are going to be running this country for the next 100 years. So we need to take good care of them. 866-391-1020 is how you can talk to Dr. Manorino this evening. That number again, 866-391-1020. We'll be back. Okay, we're back on Medical Frontiers. We're talking about the Center for Traumatic Stress in Children and Adolescents at AHN, and we have the director of that program with us. He's a clinical psychologist, Dr. Tony Manorino. And let's go right to our phone lines. Judy, you're on the air. Do you have a question for Dr. Manorino? Hello, Judy. Rob, we're going to Judy. Hi, Judy. Do you have a question for Dr. Manorino?
Yes, I do. Not so much a question as a comment.
Okay.
And that is that there are too many children that live without the love they need. And when that happens, they're a traumatic event can actually cripple them for life because there's no one there to, you might say, cuddle them, give them relief from what they have experienced. And I get so sad when I'm aware of people that do not show love to their children.
Okay.
Or they show it to one child and not another.
The favorite child syndrome.
That is
right?
Even worse.
Yeah, yeah.
And how do you compensate? How do you educate people to make them understand? You know, the harm that they're doing. And then the same with relatives. If you have more than one niece, nephew, grandchild, whatever the case might be, please learn to share the love you have with all of them. Don't play favorites because it is harmful, very harmful.
Okay, Dr. Manorino, the subject of kindness and love within families and friends and so on, very important.
Well, there's no doubt when children go through difficult experiences like Judy's describing, that the more love, the more support they get from their parents, from others in the family, grandparents, aunts and uncles, teachers, coaches, and so forth, makes a huge difference and really does help them recover more easily as they go forward in their lives. Fortunately, we also know how to engage parents and help them so that they know how to help their kids.
And you can imagine a child who loses their parents and have to go with a grandparent or maybe an aunt and uncle or even into foster care or something like that, you know, it can be very, very traumatic. You know,
I think, is there a way to start trying to teach young people in, like, they have other programs now in high school where they kind of have you learn how to take care of a baby in some school districts, whatever, and you carry this baby around. No, I'm not saying that's not important. But isn't there a way to try and make young people aware that all of this is needed? And if they don't feel capable of providing that to any children they might have, then, you know, I think you ought to think twice about marriage and all that.
All right, Judy.
Because you need it.
All right, Judy, thank you for the call. Listen, okay. Dr. Margaret Larkin is on the line.
Okay. Hi, how are you doing, Dr.
Good Pettigrew? Evening. Good evening. It's a pleasure.
Okay. Dave, if you can just hold on. We have Dr. Pettigrew on, and he's going to be talking about National Minority Health Month. And just hold on, and we'll get your call as soon as we take care of that business with the National Minority Health Month. Welcome back to Medical Frontiers, Dr. Pettigrew. Really appreciate you being here. You've been on the Medical Frontiers many times, sometimes by phone, sometimes in person. You do a wonderful job over there at Highmark. And she is the Chief Clinical Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer for Highmark. And she's had more education. She has more degrees than a thermometer. She's an OB-GYN physician. She's been a nurse. She's been a teacher, et cetera, et cetera. She's known not only in Pennsylvania and this tri-state area, but also internationally in the work that she does in these subjects. Let's talk a little bit about the last time we talked, how important it is to have diversity and equity, especially for minorities that may not have the financial welfare or the financial means that they have to access care, that type of thing. And I know that's very important to you. And also the infant mortality rate that is higher in Allegheny County than in some areas in Pennsylvania or the country. Just tell us a little bit about the importance of trying to reverse that.
So it has always been a crisis as we think about what's happening to minorities in our country. But I really want to make sure that we understand when we talk about Minority Health Month that we really are concentrating on looking at health care disparities, meaning what happens in our hospital systems and how we take care of people who are in underrepresented communities, but also how we that actually contributes to disparities in health care. And so there's so many areas we can talk about tonight. We can talk about, you know, African-Americans, Latinos, people living with disabilities. My specialty, of course, is really talking about maternal and child health. And this is an honor because this is the week that we really celebrate and lift up mothers and birthing people as it relates to making sure they have a healthy journey through pregnancy. And that is what's been the focus of my passion and my purpose. It's to really spread the word to say, you know, there are so many prongs that are involved in why women, especially women of color, don't have a great pregnancy journey and really positive outcomes. And those are the issues that we have to deal with. And we have to deal with it as a city, as our county, as our communities, to really lift up women, especially women of color, to make sure that we are not subjecting them to systemic racism, obstetric racism, not subjecting them to the higher risk of having a preterm birth, making sure that their babies have safe places to sleep and making sure that they have a good wraparound care postpartum. And so as part of the program, I always talk about that we have at Highmark AHN, First Steps and Beyond. But what we do for our Black communities really affects all of our communities. So we cannot practice a negative-sum game. If we lift one another up, we all are lifted up. So it's always a pleasure to talk with you and to kind of make sure people understand that we need to all be in this together. When we talk about diversity, we talk about everybody being at the table. That's all races, all ethnicities, you know, all of our allies, and we need to make sure that we're all there making this journey together.
Absolutely. And it is scientifically proven that the better prenatal and delivery service and postnatal care that you have, it's so much better for the mother and the child. And I mean, that's not a myth. That's scientifically proven. And so we have to make sure that we have the ability for those folks who are not seeking that type of care, that they know that that type of care is available. Mm-hmm. And we have to get that word out, increase the awareness. And that's one of the things that we do Medical Frontiers for, to increase the awareness. And I asked you the last time, are you seeing a difference? And I believe you said that we are. It's slow, but we are seeing mm-hmm. a difference.
We are. We are. And, you know, we have to be clear that many people who don't have great pregnancy journeys and outcomes are not people who are always in poverty or have challenges. Across the board, African-American women, no matter what their education level is, no matter what their socioeconomic status are, many of them do experience poorer journeys than other folks, even though they do access care. So it's very, very, very difficult to put our fingers on all of the root causes, but we do know some of them. We're seeing some of the improvements in our care of our women as it relates to how they access care, that we're becoming better partners and delivering their care, and that we are seeing some improvements with outcomes. So, yes, we are, and I'm excited about that and excited to share that with our audience. And just to make sure that women know and their families know that, you know, definitely a partnership working with doulas, community health workers, communities coming together to make sure that women are not doing this alone, that they have a village.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on this evening, Dr. Pettigrew, and we'll hear from you again, and have a good evening, and keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. Absolutely a pleasure to be on again. So thank you. Have a good day.
Okay. Good night. Okay, we need to take a break. This is Medical Frontiers. For the next segment, we'll be talking about stress and how it can be diagnosed. What do we do about it with our young children and adolescents with Dr. Tony Manarino? We'll be back. Okay, we are back for our last segment of Medical Frontiers. And tonight we're talking about the Center for Traumatic Stress in Children and Adolescents at Allegheny Health Network. And we're very fortunate to have Dr. Tony Manarino here this evening, who is a director of that program. He's a clinical psychologist, and his specialty is childhood and adolescence. And let's go to Dave. Dave, thanks for holding. Do you have a question?
Oh, thanks. I remember there was a book that came out back in the 1970s, if I remember right. It was called Future Shock. And it talked about the psychological problems that would come over generations in the future when there were so many choices in the course of the day to do that you could never get anything done. And your life was kind of ruined because you would feel frustrated all the time by never getting anything done. And whether it's, you know, kids that aren't used to doing serious stuff and they play TikTok all the time, and then all of a sudden they got to come back for food, clothing, and rent, you know, it's somewhat of a burden. But then you had that other caller, and he was talking about East Palestine, and that reminded me of a study that came out, I think it was right after Chernobyl, and they had a high suicide rate in areas where the clouds of radioactive dust had fallen on people, and the kids didn't want to have mutant children, and so they were like voluntarily killing themselves, and it got to be real dangerous because they got to be more and more hazardous waste places discovered, and so these generations didn't want to be, you know, makers of mutants. And it was terrible. And so, you know, cleaning up pollution may take care of part of the problem, but the other is, you know, calming down, getting to a steady state in the ways people live their lives.
Okay. Dr. Manarino.
Well, these major events that happen, like the earthquake and tsunami in Japan in 2011, really affect the community. The people who are the parents of young kids. We have worked with some of our colleagues in Japan related to the tsunami and earthquake there, and generations are truly affected. Think about the September 11th terrorist attack in New York, where 3,000 people died, and where some of the younger kids who were little at the time are now young adults and remembering what happened when their father, or their mother, or extended family member died. So traumatic events can have long-term impact in such a way that people struggle to get past it. The good news, though, is that when kids get help when they're young and they get evidence-based treatments for PTSD or anxiety or depression, they get better. They're resilient. They bounce back. It's not that they forget. They never forget. But they learn to make meaning of their experience in such a way that they're able to go forward and have good lives.
Yeah, and you were talking about where vast numbers of people have been affected with a horrendous event, you know, like 9/11, Chernobyl, et cetera. But we also have some pretty disastrous events that can happen in a single household. And one of those is sexual abuse and incest. Say a few words about that.
Absolutely. I mentioned during the break to you that when we started our center 30 years ago, the most common trauma referral type was sexual abuse or sexual assault of children. 30 years later, still the most common trauma type for which kids are referred is sexual abuse or sexual assault. And often the sexual abuse is perpetrated by members of the family. It could be a father, could be an older brother, but it's intrafamilial abuse or, as you said, incest.
Mm-hmm. And what is the success rate like when a child has been sexually abused by a family member? It must be more traumatic than if it's a stranger. This is somebody that should love them and care for them and not abuse them.
Well, you're saying it so well, because kids often think, this is somebody who's supposed to love me, take care of me. If I can't trust my father, who can I trust? And they grow up with a sense of betrayal. So it's sometimes the sexual abuse itself isn't as bad as the sense of a betrayal in their family. And then, of course, when kids come forward and disclose what's happened to them, they're not always believed.
Right, right. And sometimes we've talked a little bit about our justice system. Sometimes it tends to protect the father if they have a real good attorney and so on, and not bring charges against that individual, that type of thing. And one of the things I read just recently about Child Protective Services, one of the biggest problems they have is trying to separate the perpetrator from the family who is abusing a child, whether it's physical abuse or sexual abuse or what have you.
Right. And actually, during the pandemic, it was even harder to separate an offending parent from the child because they had no place to go, so they stayed in the home.
Okay, well, it's time to say goodnight, Dr. Mannarino. Thanks so much for being here. It's good seeing you. Keep up that good work and take care of those kiddos, those adolescents and children that you do so well with, okay? Okay, we'll be back in 1 week. This is Medical Frontier saying goodnight.